Welcome back to another edition of the Half Court Press Podcast. I'm John Niatawa. He is Chris Hetty. Basketball's back.
It is officially back.
Right. You actually got to see live basketball.
Yeah. It didn't count for anything, but I got to see it.
Yeah, first impressions.
Yeah.
First impressions. What do you think? Nebraska played Doan.
They did.
Won by a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have some takeaways.
Yeah, I do.
Even though they may not stick because it's an exhibition.
Yeah. I mean, it was the whole night felt. It was interesting. It was like, okay, do I take this super seriously as like this is Fred Hoiberg's inauguration into Nebraska basketball, or do I leave that for Tuesday when it matters? You know what I mean? So it was kind of like a test run of a car. So it was like you're driving it around the track and you kind of feel like you know what it is, but you don't really know how to drive that car until you're like on the highway, like out in the open roads. That's kind of what it felt like. But here are my takeaways. I circled them with the box score, okay?
I like it.
So they won 91-63, which on paper, not bad. You know, yeah. That's fine. Here's the problem, though. They went 8 for 28 from three-point range, which is 28%. They shot 11 for 24 from the free throw line, which is 45%. And they scored 54 points in the paint, and that's basically why they won. They might score 54 points in the paint in the Big Ten in total.
It won't be that.
So, like, this ain't quite what you want. You know what I mean?
They're going to be a perimeter oriented team, and that they're going to be able to win games by
in the paint.
Right.
Yeah. So part of it was just like you're playing Doan. Like you're bigger than Doan, and you're not going to be bigger than a lot of teams.
And the guards are quicker, so they can get downhill and get to the paint.
Right. Exactly.
Because you don't necessarily. I mean, you can score in the paint with big guys, obviously, but you can also score in the paint with your guards.
Right, and some of this is also kind of fast break stuff. It was some discouraging elements because it was like this isn't quite what you want to see, but the encouraging elements, if you look at the shot chart, all but three shots were either in the paint or three pointers, which is ideal. That's exactly what you want. So, the discipline of making sure you're not taking jumpers. Mid-range jumpers is definitely you know been ingrained in this team to the point where you know Deshaun Burke hit a fadeaway 15 footer and Fred Hoiberg after the game said he was pissed off that he made it because he was you know you don't want to encourage that. Yeah. So I think in general impressions, I think that a lot of this season is just going to be them figuring out each other's habits. You know what I mean? And that's just something that you can't manufacture, and that's just something that you're gonna have. I mean, there was a couple times when, you know, there was one play in particular where, you know, Mate Kavas is going down on a fast break and he's got Gervais Green for an alley-oop, and you know, Mate is from Seattle University last year, Gervais Green is from Western Nebraska Community College. They've been on the floor together for less than 5 months, and Mate doesn't understand yet that Gervais wants that high so he can throw it down because he's got a large vertical and he can throw it down. What Mate does is he kind of tries to throw a bounce pass between some guys to get it for like a layup, and it hits off Gervais' leg and it goes out of bounds. Like just those small things show me like this is just a team that's gonna figure out on like during throughout the whole season. You know what I mean? So in general, I thought they looked pretty good. There's definitely some red flags. There was at one point when Nebraska was only out rebounding Doan by like five. Most of the game it was kind of there. That's going to be an issue, but overall, I mean, they won. Cam Mack had a good game. He had 8 assists, 5 points, and 7 rebounds, which we're going to see a lot of those types of games, I think, with him. Nebraska, I can't remember what the stat is. I don't think they've ever had a triple-double player with a triple-double, and he'll get that
you think
before
so?
The new year. Cam Mack? Yeah.
That's a bold prediction. We're going to do some predictions later. That's a bold one.
I bet you. He got 8, 5, and 7 in 22 minutes.
Right.
He'll play 32 minutes at some point in some game.
I'll just add some perspective. There were 29 triple. I looked this up because I saw this on Twitter a lot last night about Cam Mack's triple-double pursuit. Nothing. I haven't seen him play, so I can't really.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how good he is.
Yeah.
But there were 29 last year in Division One and 5 by high major players. Ja had 3. Ja Morant.
Did he? Yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah. Well, here's the deal.
Ethan Happ had 2.
Here's going to be Cam's problem is actually the points. That's going to, which is rare, right? Like usually you go points, rebounds, or points, whatever. I think he'll, I think he had, how many did he have last year in JUCO? I think he had 7 triple doubles.
It's hard.
Year.
I mean, you got to play a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
First off, mm-hmm. and then yeah. obviously you got to hunt rebounds.
Yeah.
And,
like you said, I think he could do it against like a North Dakota.
Mm.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't think he'll. I don't. I would be surprised if he did it in Big Ten play. But that, I mean, that was pretty encouraging. Sean Burke led him with 15 points. We'll talk about him later. Thor had a pretty good game, 10 points and 4 boards. He had a nice moment where when he checked in for the first time.
I saw you tweet that. That's awesome.
All the crowd was kind of like, hey, yeah, like that's kind of our guy. And I was like
the only guy that we remember.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, that's sweet. Yeah. Like, so that was nice. Kevin Cross actually had a really good game. So he's down 20 pounds since he got onto campus. And so he had 10 and 10. He surprised me a little bit because he's able to run fast break a lot better than I thought he'd be able to. Like, he can actually get out and go. So a lot of encouraging things. I think Fred said after the game, the last 2 weeks they've improved dramatically. They feel really good about stuff. But the real season begins on Tuesday, so we'll kind of see what they can get done in the actual season.
This was kind of like a cool week for Nebraska basketball because, like, you got the exhibition to sort of, with your own eyes as fans, as reporters, kind of get a sense of what the team is. But you also kind of got that behind-the-scenes look with the documentary that was released on Monday, which kind of gave – that was more about, like, personalities. And, I mean, I thought there was a lot of fun there, but I guess this – like, you wrote, like, 10 takeaways and different observations that you made. But to me, one of the biggest things that stuck out to me was, like, the demeanor of Fred Hoiberg. And
in what way?
The intensity.
Sure.
Like the way that he it's almost like you can see it sort of emanating off, like, it's not rage, but it's just sort of laser focus.
Yep.
And like he's in the locker room kind of giving the pep talks and he's just to the point and saying, like, you know, this is not acceptable, or we're going to do this, this, and this, and we're going to win, and when we do this, we're awesome.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. I have to imagine that will over time resonate really well with this program, and it'll reshape sort of how things are done on a day-to-day.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm just making a loose observation
you're spot on, because he is
and the other thing I was going to add to is that it doesn't trickle down overnight, so he may not be vibing with the guys in that way next week, where he's kind of ready, sharp, locked in, and the guys are kind of like not there, not on the same wavelength yet. But like by January next season, I mean, I think you're going to see a team that carries itself like Fred.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's a good point. It's a fascinating dynamic, I think, because when I went and got lunch with Doc Sadler a couple weeks ago, one thing he said about Fred was, you know, Fred is, if it tips at 7, Fred's ready to go at 1.
Yeah.
He's ready for tip now at 1 o'clock when he's eating lunch. Right. And, you know, Fred Hoiberg is a guy who, you know, he was a great player in college, and that requires a lot of focus. He played as a true freshman, scored an incredibly important bucket as a true freshman in his hometown. He played 10 years in the NBA. He's coached in the NBA. Like, he is somebody who I think in some ways approaches every single game, even though he's the coach, as a player, as an NBA player, as like, this is what I need to do. This is the small details that we have to do. And I think I've probably brought it up on this podcast before, but one of my initial main takeaways is before he was even hired, I was looking through, just doing one of those, like, just search his name on YouTube and just kind of see what comes up and kind of get a feel for who he is. They beat North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. He walks in the locker room, very slowly walks around, gives everyone a soft high five, takes the box score, goes to the front of the room, and just starts talking about the box score and talking about what we did and this and that. Doesn't come in and, like, isn't, you know, immediately jumping around, like, isn't getting poured on with water. You know, you have that great video of Roy Williams, like, walking in. Fred isn't a dancer, isn't a singer. Like, he is so, like, it's so professional. Everything he does is so, like, calculated in a way. And so you've got that dynamic where it's so serious and you're so focused and all this stuff. But the other thing that you always hear about Fred Hoiberg is his players play with a supreme confidence. Like, they are He wants them to be who they are. He wants them to play he wants them to approach the game more. And then when they step on the floor, they're the best player out there. And that's something that I think helps when you've got Cam Mack, DeShaun Burke, Gervais Green, Samari Curtis. Those are four guys who I think if you ask them, they'd say they're the best guard on the team. But they have to four get along, and they have to four find their roles. And so he has created a way where you are focused, but you're confident, and you know what you're going to do. And you know that kind of creates a mentally tough team, I think. And that's one thing that his Iowa State teams are always good at, and one thing that this team is working on. But like, they were down 10-2 to Doan early. You know, they didn't start out very well in a lot of games in Italy, and were able to kind of respond. Now, what happens when they're down 15-2 at home or on the road to Michigan State or Iowa or whatever? Like, that's when you really learn stuff. But he has, it's a good takeaway from the documentary, yeah, he is so like just very, very professional. And then he's surrounded by, you know, Doc Sadler,
like,
who is this giant character.
I don't want to say goofballs, but like, yeah, they do embrace the fun. And even some of his players do as well,
yeah,
which is kind of like, yeah, they're willing to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the stoic, down to business coach.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that sort of, you know, it's obviously you got to have both,
mm-hmm,
you know, or else you're going to drive yourself insane. Mm-hmm. But he'll ultimately be the tone setter, especially in like when it matters in games, mm-hmm, and stuff. So I think that's,
and it's interesting too, because I think if you watch him on the sideline, he's not really, he doesn't really say a lot when he's coaching, like during play. So a lot of teams will be yelling, "Hey, stance, get down," like, "Hey, watch this," or like they'll be really, I mean, there are a couple times, I mean, you could watch Tim Miles and he would be freaking out. There's two different ways to do it, I think.
Isn't Tom Crean kind of,
Tom Crean is
at Indiana, he was like in a stance,
yes,
on the court.
Yes, I mean, he's like ready to go. Yeah. Like, he wants to like put me in. Oh, I'm gonna
Crean paces. That's what he does too. He
which by the way, there was what was the Kentucky Indiana game when they hit the game winner, yeah, against Kentucky, and he just stoically just walked right, just turned around, went to go shake cup. I mean, it was just he has such a presence.
Right.
With Fred, he is on the sideline, hands on his hips, watching. And there are so many gears turning in his head. He has 13. I don't know. I would be curious. Do you know how many plays Greg McDermott has in his playbook?
I don't. Actually, I was just talking about this because the number is
1,300. Yeah. And I was just kind of like, it was one of those things where it's like, I'm kind of curious, just kind of see. But the thing is he said, you know, on Monday, he's like, yeah, you know, we put in, you know, a play today, and it's got six subsets of, well, now here we can do this and this and this. And in my head, I was like, I wonder how many he has. And so what he's doing when he's on the sideline is he's thinking like, all right, this is what they're doing. This is what we need to be doing. Like, he's focused on, like, he's just, there's gears are running. Right. And then it's interesting too, because whenever they call a timeout or there's a TV timeout, so Doc is the first one that gets the players. So he gets them first, gives them like 10 or 15 seconds of defense, and then Fred comes in. And so it's always, I just feel like the general setup is like, it's fun and games, everything is great, but once Fred walks into the room, you're locked. Like, right, it's go time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the doc was fun. I thought it was, yeah, good. If you missed it, or even if you saw it, check out Chris's write-up on it, because you pointed out a few of the things that I thought were charming and,
yeah,
you know, kind of unique to each individual, which, you know, we don't get that picture very often, or at, mm-hmm, least that in like behind the scenes view of personalities and kind of the structure of the team. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Kudos to BTN.
I was glad that they did it. It was a really smart move. I wonder, and I haven't talked to the guy who shot it. I wonder if they were going to do this with Tim Miles, no matter what, because Tim is great TV.
Yeah.
And then they kind of stumbled on like, oh, this is perfect. We'll get this even more, you know, interesting documentary about, you know, Fred and his first team and whatnot. But BTN, I think, did a really good job. And they should just show that in the Hawks lobby on a loop for 24 hours a day. Like, it's just a recruiting machine, especially the first like 5 minutes. All these slow, dramatic shots of, you know, the practice court and of PBA, and all these dramatic shots of Fred Hoiberg. Like, it's just like, it's cinematic, you know, it's just perfect. And so it's going to be great for Nebraska recruiting, I think.
Right. It's funny when you watch it, and they talked about it at the start about like the history and what Nebraska hasn't done.
Mm.
But as you're watching it, you kind of like forget.
Yeah.
And you're sort of consumed.
You
by,
also,
oh, this is just another basketball program. And like, you kind of forget the history that, like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
This is totally like, this could be totally different, I guess.
It seeing Fred on the bench is a little surreal too, because
he made mention of that after the game, didn't he? Of just like,
well, someone asked him about his grandfather Jerry Bush, who coached in the 50s and was the coach that beat Wilt Chamberlain. They asked, did you think about him when you walked out of the locker room? And he said, yeah, I definitely did. But it's just this, it's these two competing ideas whenever you just look at him on the bench for a minute. And it's this idea of like Nebraska basketball and the history of that, and they've never been good, never won an NCAA tournament game, like all this really sad, tragic, it's sports, but tragic history, combined with who Fred Hoiberg is as a coach, what he represents in terms of basketball prowess, what he has done in the past, like combining. And it's just a weird, I talked to some fans about it for like a preview story, and they kind of said the same thing of just like, it's weird to see him here. Like, I can't believe it's actually real. You know, it's just it's a really interesting time.
Let's switch gears a little bit.
Yeah.
I cover Creighton, obviously, and I guess the big news over the last week or so, the Jays haven't played an exhibition game. They scrimmaged against Missouri a week ago, but they'll debut their 2019-20 team on Friday. Mm-hmm. So we're recording this on a Thursday. So we haven't seen them in action yet, but I've been to practices and kind of have a sense of what they're going to be. But the big news is that Jacob Epperson is hurt. He broke a bone in his leg, and he's going to be out for months. And he was one of three big men that the Jays were going to rely on to sort of replicate, I guess is the best way, replicate the production of Martin Crumple. Toward the end of the year, Martin was basically playing, I don't know, I guess I'd have to look it up, but it felt like 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
He was their go-to guy at the five. He ended up finishing in the top 10 in the Big East during Big East play alone. He finished top 10 in points, rebounds, steals, and blocks. Hmm. He did it. He did a lot for them. And you can't really measure the impact he had on ball screens and the way that teams had to game plan for that. You know, he hedged hard, and he's athletic and long and kind of pesky. And so he put opposing guards and binds that way too. And so they were going to bring, or they're going to use these three big men. They brought in Kelvin Jones from Idaho State as a grad transfer. Christian Bishop is a sophomore, and Jacob Epperson is like a three man sort of Martin.
Yeah.
They do different things. They don't, that no one really replicates his game exactly, but they can kind of meld it together. And depending on the opponent and the matchup, they could kind of find, all right, we'll use this guy more, and he'll fit what we need. But now Epperson's out, and so it's a big blow. Like,
it's huge.
Suddenly the Jays are down to two big men, and then when you like really dig into it, you're like, okay, Kelvin Jones is a new player who hasn't played at this level before, and he's still learning a lot. Like, just watching him sort of like absorb everything that they're trying to teach him on the practice floor. And Coach McDermott said it the other day. He's like, you're going to see a player who makes mistakes. He's playing hard. He's working hard. He's embracing that part of it. But hopefully, I think their idea is like the November version of Kelvin Jones will be different than February.
Sure.
And you'll see that growth process, and it might be a little maddening for fans to watch, because you're like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
But he's learning. And so you have that piece, and then you have Christian Bishop, who was a point guard in high school. And then a wing. He was a point guard to start, then a wing because he grew to 6'7", but now he's a 5.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
But as I wrote in a write-up last week, this team was always going to be backcourt-centered, and it was always going to be about their guards and their ability to get up and down the floor and drain threes and kind of dictate tempo with their speed and quickness and athleticism in the backcourt. And so it does sting to lose Jacob Epperson, and it decreases maybe the likelihood that Creighton will reach that ceiling, but I don't think it necessarily, his absence lowers the ceiling.
Yeah.
I think they can still get to where they want to go.
Do you think, though, that like it shifts even more, not pressure, but importance on, Tyshawn Alexander, Mitch Ballard, just the guards in general, that they have to play almost maybe even a little bit better?
Right, and I think it's less about what they do scoring-wise. It's almost like more important that they defend better.
Sure.
And that they're locked in and helping one another and playing that, helping recover man-to-man defense the right way. following the scouting report, doing the little things, playing hard, diving after loose balls, mm-hmm. crashing the glass. I mean, it's going to have to be a collective effort. All five guys kind of grabbing rebounds and keeping opponents who are probably going to be longer and maybe more athletic, certainly taller, mm-hmm. off the glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some four men, even some three men in the league that they're going to face who they might be boxed out by a 6'1", or Marcus Zagorowski.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And he's got to find a way to keep that guy off the glass. So that I think that piece of it is important. I mean, yeah, they got to score, yeah. certainly, but I think they're gonna do that. I think
sure.
I think that they have that in them, and they've done enough and shown enough, being that whole collective group 1 year older, like that'll be on display. Damian Mintz is out. He's got a high ankle sprain, so he'll miss Friday's exhibition and he'll miss a few weeks at the start of the season. But when you watch him, and I think I said this on the last podcast, him and Marcus Zagorowski, Tyshawn and Mitch, those four, they played like a quarter of Creighton's minutes last year. Those four were on the floor. Hmm. So they have so much. You can just see the continuity and chemistry that
was
they
it, have. Was it, were you talking about when Damian Mintz hit Mitch Balk in the corner before he was even there? Yeah.
So there's that relationship. And so that'll show up, no doubt, mm-hmm. on offense. But the question is now, how do you it's kind of always that conversation of, can you be good enough at what you want to be good at so that you mask some of your weaknesses?
Yes.
And so that... that is a question.
I had a long, not to make this about Nebraska, but I had a long conversation with a couple people about that last night, because I think maybe not as dramatic as Creighton, but Nebraska's gonna, this whole season is like, all right, let's answer the question of, can you go fast enough to get over the fact that you're not very big and you're not gonna be able to rebound? Yeah. You know what I mean? I do think Creighton will be able to rebound a little bit.
Well,
better than Nebraska can. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I mean, they have traditionally even smaller lineups,
like, yeah,
they're pretty good on the defensive glass. They're not, they definitely most years have not really made an effort on the offensive glass, but mm-hmm. they've been pretty good defense. They weren't great last year as a defensive rebounding team, but under McDermott they have been, and they have a guy like Damian Jefferson, mm-hmm. who could grab 6 rebounds a game at the four position or something, or Mitch Balik, you know, he could up his rebound percentage, and so could Tyshawn Alexander. So they have the capability, mm-hmm. but
you got to actually do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's such a mentality thing, I think, to go get the glass, to go to the glass and to be sort of more, you know, when you're boxing out, how often do you see fouls called on box outs?
Right.
But it's such a physical moment in the game.
Yeah.
That play of like putting a body on somebody and trying to shield them from getting to the glass. So it's not almost anything goes, because there's sometimes fouls called, but like for the most part, you just got to be tougher, and mm-hmm. then you got to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've worked on it, but now they gotta, we'll see.
Is that the main thing you're looking at for the exhibition on Friday?
Yeah, I'm looking at just like an overall level of engagement
mm-hmm.
from the team on the defensive end,
because
for a lot of the reasons that we talked about, I think that there's going to be just a larger sort of emphasis on some of these veterans who've been in it before to not have mental mistakes, and because if you're really solid, I think that's their hope, is that they can just be solid, mm-hmm. fundamentally sound on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to play a guy like Miles Powell, and it's going to be hard to slow him down. You know, they're going to play good players who are going to they're going to get buckets against them. They're not going to be an elite team defensively, but they want to be elite offensively. So you match elite level production offensively with a solid defense that can get a stop when you need it.
Then, just be good enough.
Yeah, then you're
be
okay.
good enough on defense. Right. Yeah,
that. But we don't know that yet.
Right.
Yeah. So the coaches were encouraged after the scrimmage about Creighton's level of fight and effort and kind of connectivity defensively against Missouri. Well, Missouri was like picked 13th in the SEC though,
mm-hmm.
and you know that team is, well, I think will play with a level of intensity, and it had some length too that Creighton couldn't replicate in practice. A true barometer will be Michigan in a couple weeks, mm-hmm. so we'll try to catch a glimpse.
Where is that game?
At Michigan.
Oh, okay.
So we'll try to catch a glimpse on Friday and make some observations, mm-hmm. and Tuesday too when they open against Kennesaw State. But really, you know, that toughness piece, and can you stay engaged when shots aren't falling? Mm-hmm. Like when you go 5 trips down the floor offensively and you don't score,
mm-hmm.
then what? Like, are you still
engaged on the defensive end? Right? Yeah.
And they had issues with that last year. Mm-hmm. I thought they did. I think they would argue that they were better at it. The players would toward the end of the year. And you saw the numbers kind of shift a little bit in terms of the points per possession that they allowed later in the year. They kind of won some games with their defense at the end of the year. Like Marquette, now there was some sloppiness from Marquette, but they went up there and won, and it was largely because of their defense. But can it be can it be part of their identity?
Yeah.
That level of engagement and focus to where they are a sound defensive team. Mm-hmm. Maybe again, not necessarily wowing you.
Yeah, you don't have to be great. Right. Just be good enough where even if it's 91-87, mm-hmm. that you can get two stops at the end of the game and you can, free throw it out.
Right.
You know?
So it'll be interesting. I'm kind of curious to see what kind of lineup they throw out there to start. My guess is that you'll see, because Mintz is out. So my guess is you'll see Marcus Zagorowski, Mitch Balick, Tyshawn Alexander, Damian Jefferson, who's been a little banged up in practice, but I would imagine he starts at the four, and then Christian Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
So those are your five that Creighton's starting the season with. Once Mintz comes back, then he might start, and maybe it depends on matchups. Mm-hmm. But that's your five with, first off the bench being... maybe Kelvin Jones.
Let's say everything is equal and they're not Jacob Epstein, obviously he's out for, but in 3 weeks, right? How deep could they go if everybody's healthy?
Well, they could go very, Denzel Mahoney's a transfer from Southeast Missouri and, he's not eligible until December. So mm-hmm. once you hit December, if everybody's healthy,
mm-hmm.
they could be pretty deep. But, initially,
yeah,
I don't know. I think that the starters are going to be logging a lot of minutes.
Yeah,
Sharif Mitchell and Jalen Windham will be two guys that I think will play a role. I think they're going to have they're freshmen. They weren't highly regarded, but I think that they do. Jalen Windham has a scorer's mentality, and he does that well.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharif Mitchell is a quick, sort of fearless ball handler. Gets into traffic, can spray and create a bucket for himself. Get to the foul line. And then on defense, he's tenacious.
Mm-hmm.
So they do. They have they found their niche already, it seems. And so they might. They have a chance to find a role. So yeah, it'll be. I'm kind of curious as to how Greg McDermott uses his rotations and how he kind of substitutes in and out with the lineups that.
Yeah.
Or with the roster that he has available right now.
Well, he's got to beat Fred. Fred subbed in 9 guys in the first, five minutes.
Oh, really?
Just everyone play. I was trying to keep track of subs, and I was like, you know what? I quit. this is un-. And then Doan actually was doing the same thing. But the thing that I think exhibitions are such a, I don't know if we undervalue them, but they're so valuable, especially for Creighton and for Nebraska, but for right. Creighton even on Friday. Let's just figure out what these guys look like. Let's figure out, all right, can we throw in Sharif Mitchell? Let's just give him 4 minutes and just see what he does. You know what I mean? I'll be curious kind of what the takeaways are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they have a decent idea, but you never quite know until...
Until the lights come on.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's do some predictions real quick.
Okay.
I'll do some things for Creighton and you do some things for Nebraska.
Okay.
Let's start with Nebraska. What do you got? How are they... What's their record?
I had them in my preseason poll. I have them 12th in the conference. I have them above Minnesota. Minnesota is the same team that they're losing some serious players in Amir Coffey and Jordan Murphy. I think those are two guys that Minnesota has a couple guys that I like, but I'm not completely convinced that Richard Pitino's the guy up there. And they went to Italy and didn't look good. And I just have a feeling that could be a bad situation this year. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think they're going to be that great. And then Northwestern, who basically everybody left, and it's going to be a sad time there. So I've got Nebraska above them, I think just behind Rutgers. Rutgers just has a couple returners, and they're huge. Yeah, they're pretty good. So I got them at 12th. For historical perspective, in Fred Hoiberg's first year at Iowa State, they finished last in the Big 12. They went 16-16, and I think they had 3 conference wins.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't be surprised if that was kind of a similar
thing. About the Big Ten this year is it seems like it lost a lot, but there's just a lot of, I feel like I say this every year with the league, like there's just so much depth in the middle. I mean, like there's a lot of solid quality
and it's
teams.
Different, but the thing is this year it's different depth, so like Illinois is going to be really good. I think Penn State could be really good. I think Iowa could be really good.
The schedule, you think, like, okay,
chalk those up.
But you can't quite.
Exactly.
And then are you really going to expect a team like Ohio? Well, Ohio State's going to be better. But
yeah,
like,
I think they're way pretty
A team
good.
Like Michigan, even though they lost their coach and some players, like how far would Michigan drop?
Yeah.
Or how far does Wisconsin drop when it's lost Ethan Happ or Purdue lost Carson Edwards? Like, sure, maybe those teams won't be as good.
But they
like,
won't be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, so I've got them 12th in the conference. What do you have? Where do you have Creighton in there?
I've got Creighton fourth.
Oh, okay.
Fourth. My logic was, okay, look at last year's standings. Villanova and Marquette were the top two teams. Mm-hmm. Villanova and Marquette both got worse. Marquette lost two of its top three scorers to transfer. Villanova lost its top two guys to the NBA. Now, Villanova has a lot of talent. It's young talent. So maybe you can make the argument by February they're better than they were a year ago, the Wildcats. But right now, I like just looking at it, I don't see it. So Marquette, and then you have, one, two, three, four teams that tied for third.
Yeah.
And I think all of those four teams, Creighton in that mix, are going to be better. So to me, the league looks like it looks like it's going to be kind of almost a similar replication of last year, where there's not much difference from team one to team 10.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an elite team. I don't know if there's a garbage team.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes it tough to predict like who you think or how you think it. I mean, there's going to be a lot of ties.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of in the final standings, you know, like I'm sure there's going to be a 3-way tie for third and like a 4-way tie for seventh or sixth or something.
It's like it's like a bunch of nine seeds.
That's what it feels.
It's just
like
a bunch of nine seeds.
Right. And last year it kind of felt like a bunch of NIT teams.
Yes. So okay. Yes, that's good.
This year it kind of feels like a bunch of nine seeds.
Yeah.
And
it's basically an 8-9 game every night.
It is. And the question is how fast can Jay Wright sort of groom his youngsters, and then is Seton Hall going to match the expectations that a lot of people have for him? They were picked to win by the coaches, picked to win the league, and they were picked 12th in the AP preseason poll. I don't know if they're that good.
Yeah, I don't. I was a little surprised because they came and played at Nebraska last year, and I remember thinking like, boy, this Miles Powell guy, he's the real deal. But they had some dudes, and I was like, this looks pretty good. But Nebraska beat them by like 15 or 20, and so I was like, they're all right. Like, I think they're pretty good. And then you go from a year, and they're picked to win, and it was like, I don't.
Right.
It's a little.
And if you kind of like look at their schedule, a lot of this had to do with Miles Powell. But like, Seton Hall was trailing late against Creighton twice and came back to win. Mm-hmm. It was down big against Marquette and came back to win. It won a game with a bad call against St. John's. I mean, they were. It finished 9-9 in league play, but you could easily just sort of like finagle with it, and you're like, oh, you know, they don't make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And now we're saying like they're going to win it, so I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, Creighton's bringing back as much as any other team. I know the coaches picked them seventh, but in my mind, like, you know, the Jays are returning. Like everyone is in a similar boat. Like I guess you're kind of just betting on which coaching staff can develop their pieces better, because it does feel like, aside from the teams that I mentioned at the top, Marquette and Villanova, like everyone is going to get better.
Yeah,
because they're bringing back 75%, 80%, 85% of the minutes.
And it's an interesting way to put it.
I don't really know how to predict it.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to put it, because I totally agree with you, and I almost feel like the Big Ten is just like a notch worse. And now that's even saying with Michigan State, they're the preseason number one. But like, Maryland is picked at number two.
Like, do we
I think
buy that?
I think they're going to be. I think yeah. Like, I think they're going to be good. But like, they don't have Bruno Fernando, and he was a big deal, and he was good.
Actually, like,
you know what I mean? Like,
when
Purdue.
I
don't know.
Though, I thought that Maryland was if I had to pick a team that would most likely to disappoint, I was like, I think it's Maryland. And that's not
maybe
to say that they're going to be bad.
Yeah,
I just like top 10 for me.
Yeah, they're seven overall. Yeah, yeah. That was where I was like, I don't know. Right. Now I have.
That's like Maryland for me. It was like Maryland and Seton Hall. I'm like, I mean, I get why. You can totally make an argument for why they're there,
Where's Seton Hall in the preseason?
12, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like,
yeah.
Feels high.
Yeah, it feels a little high. Do you want to do leading score next?
Yeah, give me what
overall record?
Yeah, what do you think the record's going to be?
All right, so I did it for
Fred Hoiberg was 500 in year one.
16-16 exactly.
Can he get to 500 this year?
I very quickly did a look through the schedule. I have him at 13-18. But I'm going to give or take two games, right? So I could see them being 15-17? Mm. Sorry, no, 15-15 is what it would be. 15-16, yeah. I could see them winning a game in the second half of the season that they have no business winning. I could also see them going on a pretty long losing streak at some points and trying to figure out what's going on. I think this is going to be kind of a roller coaster grind of a season. The reason why I was a little bit on the lower end, I think 16-16 as they went at Iowa State, part of that, you know, 20 league games is a lot.
Well, and the other thing that
kind you know
of,
what I mean?
The other thing that kind of like stinks a little bit because Nebraska obviously built its schedule to build some hype and confidence in the non-con, but then you throw two Big Ten games
in the middle of that. Oh, so yeah.
They got a road trip to Creighton, and is the Georgia Tech game on the road?
Yeah, it's in Atlanta.
Okay, mm-hmm. And then the Cayman Islands tournament.
Yeah.
So, like those five games, you know, you can be 3-2 out of that or
yeah.
something, you know, or maybe mm-hmm. you find a way to go 4-1 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then it's like Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean,
and which are so which are
seven games?
Yeah,
that and Indiana kind of like all toss ups.
Yeah,
they feel like they're all toss ups.
Yeah, and Indiana, I don't think is going to be that good this year, but it's still a Big Ten. It's still first game Big Ten team in Bloomington. Yeah. You're going to get all these guys who've never played in a Big Ten game before, and you're going to Assembly Hall. Good luck.
Right,
and then you got to play Purdue, and Matt Harms is like about a foot taller than everybody. Like, yeah. He's just huge.
I guess the...
So that's going to be... That's right. The hard part.
So they'll be underdogs in, I don't know, if I just looked at it, it's like those seven games, Cayman Islands, Georgia Tech, Creighton, Indiana, Purdue, like they're underdogs in five of those or yeah. four of those. I don't. Yeah. I know the field isn't crazy strong in the Cayman, but there's still quality teams there.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like every game's a toss-up in the Cayman.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because I have them going 1-2 in that. But I could see them going 2-1.
Yeah.
Like, I could see them, you know what I mean? Like, so that's why I've got to give or
totally
take two games.
Out of the realm of possibility for them to have some success during that stretch, but mm-hmm. more than likely, it'll be kind of like a buzzkill
yeah.
a little bit.
And I think, yeah.
Thanks, Big Ten, for throwing two conferences.
Yeah, seriously. I just think, in general, they can get to 500, but I'm not going to bank on it this second. Like, I'm a doubting Thomas. Like, prove it to me. Mm-hmm. So if early on, they're starting to look pretty good, I just think there's going to be some roadblocks early, and it's going to kind of take them some time to figure some stuff out, and they have to figure out what it's like to lose by 30 in right. practice the next day.
And then,
I guess,
here's the other question is, like, are they going to get tripped up by one of these sort of quote-unquote cupcake teams that they play?
Right.
You know?
Do they shoot cold against North Dakota?
The incarnate word.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
That would be something, obviously.
Yeah, so I've got them.
Like to avoid.
Yeah, 13-18 is what I've got right now. But again, give or take two games, they could win.
All right, so I have Creighton at 21-10.
A perfectly Creighton record.
Right. I mean, last year they were 20-15 yeah. with the extra NIT games in there. So, 20-15, that's right. That's 21-10, and then we'll see what happens in the Big East tournament. But to me, if they're that, I think they end up on the right side of the bubble.
I think that sounds about right.
21-10. I like I said, I don't I, the Big East. I kind of went through the schedule a little bit and said like 11-7
mm-hmm.
for Creighton, but it's so close that a key injury for a couple weeks could drop you out of the hunt for an NCAA tournament berth because you'll lose two or three in a row and then suddenly you're on the wrong side of that logjam of teams that are in contention. And so
do you think Creighton fans would be okay with 21-10?
I don't know.
Really, if they go 21-10, what do you think the feeling is? And
I think if they make the NCAA tournament, people would be pretty pleased with that.
Mm-hmm. What if they go 21-10 and they're a 2 seed in the NIT?
Yeah, I don't think that would happen though if they went 21-10.
Yeah.
Like if they went 18-5 13,
yeah.
Then the NITs, and like 18 and 13, that's, we're talking about the difference of like when you're 21 and 10,
yeah.
Like that means that you probably won a game at the buzzer. You know, maybe you got fortunate down the stretch at one, and, mm-hmm. and maybe you caught a team on a bad night. And if you flip those, which is really easy to flip those, you're off the bubble. So last year they were on the wrong side of the bubble. I think this year they'll be on the right side, but not by much.
Yeah.
And like 21 and 10, you'd think, oh, yeah. I mean, their schedule non-con is challenging, but it's not as challenging as last year. Last year they were top 30, I think, in overall strength of schedule, maybe. It was one of their more challenging schedules under Greg McDermott. This year they're going to play, you know, they're playing at Michigan. They've got San Diego State and either Iowa or Texas Tech in Vegas. And they're going to play Arizona State and Oklahoma and Nebraska. But yeah, those are winnable games.
I think
all of them. It's tough to win all of them, but
they could beat Michigan. I don't know about Michigan. I'm not totally sold. I think they have some guys, but it's going to be hard for Joan Hart first year, I think.
You would think.
I don't
know what they're going to look like. I don't know what they're going to be.
I think John Beilein consistently, I think there are a handful of coaches out there who take their talent level and they just coach it up so much higher. And I feel like John Beilein, Michigan was always better than they ever should have been. You know what I mean? Like they were always better than.
I heard Beilein talking on a podcast where he was like, but the thing is like better than they should have been in the eyes of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But in his eyes, like they were recruiting the players that they felt fit what they needed.
Sure. Yeah,
he talked about how you don't recruit, like you're not just hunting talent. You recruit to fit a team together.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you have your go-to scorer, you don't need to recruit another go-to scorer.
Yeah.
Like bring in a guy who fits the next piece when you're putting this puzzle together. You don't need eight guys that look exactly the same or do everything this, like they're the same player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes when you have to find a guy who fits a certain like niche, maybe he's not, no one else is recruiting him.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but we'll see. I don't know what Juwan Howard's thinking. Yeah, I don't know what Juwan Howard's thinking.
Juwan's more of the flash. I think he's going to bring. He's going to bring in some.
He's going to be. It's going to be one and done Central in Michigan.
But this year,
yeah, I don't know. I just think there's a transition year. Yeah,
you got a national title pick.
A national title pick.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. We're going to say who was going to lead the team in scoring. You got it.
I have Deshaun Burke.
Deshaun Burke. I got Tyson Alexander. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are going to be fun. And
who's your national title pick?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. I think.
Are you on board with the Michigan State train?
Kind of, but not really.
Never been preseason number one. That seems weird.
I kind of am. I think. I don't know. Like I think that they are the best team in the Big Ten by far. But I'm not totally convinced they're the best team in the country. But at the same time, I have a hard time then thinking to myself, like, all right, well, who's actually better?
Yeah.
Like, is Duke
better? I'm not giving that to Duke.
I'm a little bullish on Kansas because there's just so much going on.
They'll be pretty motivated.
Yeah, and like there's no one really in the SEC that scares me.
I like Kentucky.
Yeah, but I also don't always buy in on Calipari. I know, in terms
this team,
of, you know,
he's actually,
I mean?
He has sophomores now.
Yeah, know, that's true.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, the rare sophomore for John Calipari.
I like an older Calipari team.
Yeah.
That,
older? They're all like 19 now instead of 17.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I usually try and pick a team that they've got some senior leader, like a Villanova. They've got some seniors. They have some talent.
Like a Villanova.
Yeah, talent. Yeah, they got some talent early. So like,
yeah, I mean,
the other thing is, if I have on my team Cassius Winston, I feel like I'm going to win every night.
Yeah.
And so I feel pretty good. If Michigan State is the national title, that wouldn't totally surprise me because of Cassius Winston. But I just want to see what they actually look like early. And we will, because, you know, you've got the Champions Classic or whatever it's called when the top four teams play each other.
Yep.
But I you can't ever really overlook the North Carolinas of the world. So I don't know. We'll see.
They got maybe the best freshman in the country, Cole Anthony. I think that's the guy who everyone sort of pinpointed as like the must watch of that class.
Yeah. Who are you thinking?
I don't know.
Have you done your AP poll yet?
Oh, I actually not voting this year.
Are you not?
So, yeah.
You're free. Yeah,
I'm free. I like what you said about that mix of like young talent and then veteran. You need veterans to win a title.
Yeah.
And like Virginia had it.
Yes.
Villanova had it the 2 years it won at North Carolina. In between that, those two Villanova titles had it. Like that seems to be the formula. But those veterans got to be like really good.
Right. And that's so, the thing is Michigan, like Michigan State has that. Right?
But then again, the preseason hype of it all, like that, the team doesn't, Michigan State doesn't seem to, I think of that team a couple years ago where they had Jackson and Miles Bridges and they were kind of like destined to win it or at least make the Final Four and it crumbled in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Izzo's teams seem to be better when they're a little bit under the radar. And
yes, like, I totally agree. I totally agree.
Hyped.
Yeah. And the other thing is like, okay, think of the Final Four last year. Texas Tech lost a lot. I think Chris Beard is just a fantastic coach. I think that he will not be at Texas Tech very long. I think he'll take over somewhere else. But they lose a lot, right? Auburn, I haven't really looked a whole lot at Auburn, but that seemed somewhat fluky in some ways.
Well, they had a weird roster. It's actually interesting. I made the note that Creighton, if you want to be completely optimistic, I'm not saying Creighton's making the Final Four, but if you're thinking about how is Creighton going to manage this with like two big men, basically, mm-hmm. look at Auburn. Because last year they were, now they had a little bit more commitment to the defensive end in terms of like being disruptive. They forced a lot of turnovers, but they shot a ton of threes. They took care of the ball. They were terrible on the glass because they didn't have size.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they still managed to make the tournament. And obviously they made it to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Largely because they made shots when they needed to. They just had dynamic guards. But sometimes with dynamic guards, like that can...
That can
propel you to a late March run. And so I was like, yeah, it doesn't, like they did, it was a little smoke and mirrors, as you said, but then again, it wasn't because that formula would,
if it works, it works. Over, yeah.
Sometimes that's how you get there. I mean,
so that's the thing where, so then the other two are Virginia, who they're new, and Michigan State. And Michigan State returns like nearly everybody.
Right, so why would you not
assume that they're going to do it? So I don't know. There's also going to be some random, like Providence is going to be great, or some random, you know, there's always some.
I don't think Providence is going to be good.
But you know what I mean? There's always some random team that you don't think is going to be good. Like maybe Maryland really is that good.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Jalen Smith becomes, you know, player of the year and they're
right.
Tremendous. So I don't know. Yeah. I guess preseason pick, I'd probably pick Michigan State, but I don't feel super great about it.
But like, I don't really have an argument against them.
Yeah.
Other than the hype thing, which is kind of silly. So.
Right. I just, Cassius Winston plays like a 10-year-old NBA vet with bad knees and still scores like 20 and 10. So like I'll go all in on that guy.
Yeah, he's a gamer for sure. All right, if Nebraska and Creighton were to play today, who you got?
Creighton by like 12.
Yeah, Creighton's not got a lot of depth, but in one game scenario, I'd take him as well by double digits. We'll be back next week. Mm-hmm. We'll actually have real games.
Yeah.
Real basketball to talk about. We'll break down Nebraska's home opener and Creighton's home opener.
Both on Tuesday nights, correct?
They're both playing Tuesday night, like everybody. Should be fun.
We're back.
All right. Thanks, Chris.